just a sulky, over bumpy, kinda hunky superhero.
Hot to fisted and electrically transistored superhero. An exotically neurotic
and aquatic superhero.
The Marvel superheroes have arrived.
Hello and welcome to Marvel Vision, a Marvel Studios TV show podcast brought to you by Cinema Sangha. My name is Devin Faraci. I am one of the hosts of the program. Joining me as he traditionally does.
My name is Derek Faraci, and you've demonstrated a consistent lack of respect for wood as I see it. How are you, Devin?
I am okay. I had a big day. I just came back from a memorial service for my friend Doug, who died a few months ago. He worked at Vidiot's here in LA, was like one of the programmers and founders of the Vidiot's East Side Theater and video store space. And they did an all weekend tribute to Doug with a service today, like sort of a gathering today. And they showed some of Doug's favorite movies. And they showed a movie today that I went to go see that I thought I had seen, but I never had. And that I'm going to recommend to everybody listening to this, but nobody can see it.
Empire Strikes Back.
You can't see it. It's a movie I'm going to recommend you can't see. You can't, it's not available. It's a movie called Demon Lover Diary. And it is a documentary about the making of a low-budget regional horror movie in 1974 that was shot while they're making the movie. You know American Movie, that film American Movie?
I do.
The documentary about the Midwestern filmmakers who were kind of doofuses and yeah. You know, maybe dream bigger than they can ever achieve.
Yeah.
This is like American Movie, but the truly dark and twisted version of it. And it is incredible. It is legitimately the best movie about filmmaking I've ever seen.
Okay.
You can't see it. It's just unavailable anywhere. We got a special.
It's on YouTube.
Is it on Demon Lover Diaries on YouTube?
Yes. I see two different links to it on YouTube. One is an hour 26 and one is an hour 23.
Wow, I didn't think it was out there. Okay, that's great. I mean, it's not available legally, so feel free to go watch it. I will give you it's a cinema verite sort of documentary. Like one of the people working on this movie, like professional film people from Massachusetts come to Michigan or Wisconsin, Michigan maybe, to shoot this movie. And the guys that are making the movie are maniacs, and one of the guys that's making the movie cut off his own finger to get $8,000 insurance money so that he could make this movie. And that's the beginning of the film.
That's dedication. You gotta give him credit.
It is nuts. It is like a horror movie in and of itself, kind of. It's very funny, but also there's like an incredible amount of tension as these guys who don't know what they're doing are dealing with these people from the East Coast who are filmmakers. And it is really something else. And it gets to a very dark place at the end. And I'm not going to spoil anything, but it was a phenomenal fucking movie. Just loved it. I could not recommend it more. It's like the people who made it own the rights to it. And they keep saying they're going to put it on video or whatever, and they never do. So that's why I can't believe that it's available on YouTube, because it's never been released on video.
I mean, it's listed on YouTube. I haven't clicked the links. Maybe
I'll take a look later. I can't imagine somebody did a fake Demon Lover Diary on YouTube. It's hard to imagine. I'm sure it's shitty quality. But it is a really incredible documentary. And it's like 1974 in the Midwest. It is crazy. The haircuts and the clothes – it is fucking phenomenal. I mean, just next level good. So if people can see it, I would recommend it. I'm going to write about it, I think, this week, because it's just like, even if it's hard to find, it's just such a great fucking movie. And I think it would be like really famous if it was easy to find.
Yeah.
I think it would be like American movie quality. In fact, so my friend Doug, it was one of his favorite movies, and he was the guy who, like, the few times that it screened in the last 20 years, Doug was the guy who screened it. And the filmmakers allowed them to play it today because Doug was one of three people when they did a sight and sound poll in 2015 or something for the best 100 best documentaries of all time. Doug was one of three people who voted for Demon Lover Diary as one of the best documentaries of all time. Guess what? All three people who voted that were in the theater today.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah, it was amazing. So it was pretty exciting. Real big company. But it's, I mean, like, honestly, if people saw this movie, it would be huge. It's fucking incredible. Sound quality is a little rough. But then something else happened. So after the movie, I was talking to a friend of mine, and a lot of the people are there because Doug was a film festival guy in the film festival world. And talking to a friend of mine who was there, who does a lot of film festivals, and he told me, you know, when I go to a festival and I got to see 5-6 movies in a day, you know, I'm not off. Like, it's just, you can't help it. Like, it's just, you start, you know, losing it. And he says, so I carry smelling salts and I'll crack a smelling salt to wake me up. And now we all know smelling salts from the movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how many, but you don't see them anymore. No movies have smelling salts anymore.
I'm trying to think the last time I saw them in a movie.
I feel like even period pieces don't do smelling salts anymore. Right?
I can't think of the last time I saw a movie use smelling salts.
But like, we grew up in a world where smelling salts were regularly deployed in motion pictures.
Smelling salts, quicksand, these were everyday occurrences. Yeah.
So my friend had smelling salts, and I said, I got to smell the smelling salts. I got to know. Like, I got to know, is this real?
Yeah.
And so I cracked the smelling salt. It comes in a little paper container that you squeeze and it cracks. And I put it up to my nose, which apparently you're not supposed to do.
How are you supposed to do it?
You're supposed to hold it down around your waist to get the smell of it.
Oh, really? Wow.
I staggered backwards and fell into a wall.
Oh, my God.
It was un-fucking-real. It was like some kind of giant fucking slimy hand blew up into my fucking nostril and punched me in the back of my sinuses.
Wow. Jeez.
It was, when you watch these movies and people are like unconscious and they put a smelling salt under them and they wake up, I'm like, I always figured that was just like movies. That's how it's the movies. But no, that I truly believe that if I were knocked out and you put a smelling salt under my nose, I would sit the fuck right up. And I was talking to another friend who works as a movie crew guy. And so he does like a lot of late nights and a lot of long shoots, like 18-hour days and shit like that. And he tells me that most crew carry smelling salts. And because like when you're going to drive home, you want to have that to crack open so that you can like be awake for the ride home. But you don't want to like drink a ton of caffeine or something because you're going to go home and go to bed, right?
Yeah.
The brand that he gets is called Wake the Dead. And I truly believe it would work. I have never.
Where do you get smelling salts?
On Amazon, baby. You can get them on Amazon.
Oh, there you go.
They're legal and they're available. A friend of mine who doesn't have a sense of smell tried the smelling salt, and she was knocked backwards.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Isn't that something else? So big day. Great movie. A sad memorial for Doug, and then also I got punched in the face with smelling salts.
That is wild. That was a day.
It is fucked up, the smelling salts. Oh, man. I mean, I legitimately always thought it was just like motion picture stuff. Do you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
But no, it's the real fucking deal.
Huh. I wonder who came up with it.
I mean, it's old, right? So like it came out a long time ago. It's kind of fallen out of favor, I guess. They like to give you injections now, you know?
Yeah. They do the adrenaline shot or whatever.
Yeah, but this, like, I could totally see that waking somebody. I guess they do it in boxing still, I guess, right?
I was going to ask you if that's what they use in boxing, because, like, I'm thinking, like, in the Rocky movies, they always, like, waft something right under his nose, right?
Yeah, that might be smelling salts. I don't know if it's menthol or smelling salts. I mean, menthol will also open up your...
I always thought it was menthol.
That'll open up your sinuses too, especially if they're bleeding and stuff like that, and they're contused. But I wonder if it's smelling salts.
Menthol helps with breathing in general, right? Yeah. Isn't that right? Yeah. So I would imagine that's what they use in boxing.
No, it might be smelling salts because you want to fucking snap this guy back to reality if they've been punched in the head 25 times.
Maybe they have both. Maybe they have mentholated smelling salts.
I can't imagine the menthol making a difference on this shit, man. I don't know how to describe it. It was like something went in my nose.
That's wild.
And I legitimately fell down. Like I staggered back and hit the wall. If there was no wall behind me, I would have fallen down.
Wow. That is wild.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know you're supposed to hold it down by your waist. I just put it right up to my nose.
So your friend who uses it to watch movies. It's good for boxers or if you got to watch a movie.
Well, that's he'll, I mean, like, that's the thing. It'll wake you up. It's, again, that's why crew guys have it in their cars, yeah, you know, because yeah, it'll pep you right up.
When he uses it, does he use it like in the theater? Because if you're supposed to keep it at your waist, does that mean like the two people sitting on either side of him also get hit by it?
I believe he's listening to this podcast right now. He does. He does use it in the theater. And that's how this came up in conversation was the question of, did you smell something during the movie? Because he wasn't sure if other people could smell the smelling salts when he cracked them. Because he did crack a smelling salt in that movie.
Okay.
So
shoots straight up?
I don't know what the I could not tell you, man.
Are we sure that smelling salts are not, in fact, demonic?
I would actually believe it.
Because that sounds demonic. If you can hold it down at your waist and you're sitting in a theater, there's people sitting next to you, and you open it and it knows just to aim at your nose.
I mean, yeah, it might just be shooting straight up. Like the physics of it might be such that the weight of the whatever. I mean, who knows? I honestly don't know. He probably is listening to this podcast. He probably listening to this podcast on his flight back home right now. So, hi, James.
Well, we have questions, James.
Thank you for the smelling salt.
We have questions.
It's just exciting because it's one of those experiences you'd never think you'd have because you just don't think it exists anymore.
Yeah.
So it was pretty
cool. I'll be honest with you. I never thought it existed. I thought it was just a made up thing.
I mean, I had a suspicion of the same shit. To tell you the truth, I always sort of had the suspicion that it was kind of nonsense.
Yeah. I always just figured it was like bullshit.
Yeah. No.
You know.
No. No. It's wow. It is definitely not bullshit.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
There you go.
So, I mean, it has no other effect. It's just fucking like getting smacked. I mean, but smacked inside your skull. That's the only effect. You don't get high.
Sounds terrible.
You don't get energy. You know what I mean? Like, it just fucking snaps you awake.
I don't like that.
I mean, I don't think I would not recommend doing it recreationally. It is not. It is not something I'd recommend doing. I was told by somebody today that if you hold it too close to your nose, you risk the chance of blowing your sense of smell out.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so.
Interesting.
Yeah, I know. So, anyway, that was my day. So, I had a whopper of a day today.
You did.
What'd you do today?
What did I do today? Today, I cleaned my apartment. I went grocery shopping. I finally completed the UN victory on Civilization Revolution
finally
mode as the Arab nations.
Congrats,
so I was able to finish that.
Now you can die happily. Oh, you still have more to do.
I want on every Xbox, going back to the very first Xbox, I have golded every difficulty and every victory option across the board on Civilization Revolution, and I'm doing that again with the new Xbox, the Series X, or Xbox One X, whatever the frick the new one is called. And I'm currently in the Emperor stage, but I still have like four more nations to complete on that, and then I can move into Deity and start moving and doing those.
That's important to have goals, I think, is the thing.
It's the most relaxing game in the universe. So
it's I know, yeah.
I just love. You know, I put on music or a podcast or whatever, and I do that. And
I can't have it on my phone because I get sucked into it because it just creates like perfect theta waves that I'm just like zoned out. Like,
yeah,
I would play it a lot when I was hyper stressed and I would just lose three or four hours of my day. I was so stressed and then I would just play the game and then the whole afternoon would go by.
Sure. Sure. So, no, I get it.
Yeah.
And it usually takes me to do all of this because I'll do it for like, I'll get real into it for a bit. And then I won't play for months, and then I'll get into it for a bit, and I won't play for months. And it usually, like, when I finish it is right about the time the next generation of consoles is coming out. And then, luckily, it's always ported over to the next
generation. You are the Sisyphus of Civilization Revolution.
Yep. I love it. It's my favorite game. So,
You saw Last Night with the Devil this weekend?
No, I did not.
Oh, you saw Immaculate?
I saw Immaculate and Ghostbusters.
How was Ghostbusters?
It's better than Afterlife.
Okay.
It is, I would say it is the fourth best Ghostbusters movie.
Wow.
Out of five. So.
Wow.
But it, like, I laughed. There were moments that made me really laugh. Kumail Nanjiani is the saving grace of the movie. He brings like that con man energy that the originals had.
Right.
You know, he brings that kind of energy to it. Patton Oswalt's only in one scene, but that scene, he steals everything. You know, okay. He's great. There's a weird bit in it. I don't feel I'm the person to discuss, and that's it.
This is like an identity thing?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
If it's about the character podcast, you have the space to discuss it because you as a podcast.
No, he has no identity. He is that is one of the problems. The biggest problem with the movie is there's like 15 characters and there's just nothing for most of them to do.
Right.
Like Finn Wolfhard has like nothing to do in this movie. Carrie Coon has nothing to do in this movie. She literally does nothing. To the point, at one point, one of her children, Finn Wolfhard, comes and says, "I need help with something." And she's like, "You're 18. You can do it yourself." It's like, lady, you're in this movie. You should get off the couch.
Like Carrie Coon is doing the most important job of all, collecting a paycheck. As yes. a terrific working actor, she yes. is collecting a paycheck and showing up and having craft services. God bless yes. her. God bless
yeah,
her.
Yeah, and I'm happy for her because she's a very good actor, so it's nice to see her get paid. But, like, she does nothing the entire movie.
Crazy.
Finn Wolfhard Crazy. Barely does anything. Paul Rudd, I'm not sure he's aware he's in the movie. This is the first time I've seen Paul Rudd give a completely lifeless performance.
Wow, this is a win. This is you said it was the fourth best.
Yeah, it's still better than Afterlife. It's better than
Afterlife. Afterlife is terrible.
Yes. Yes. And there are moments I really laugh. There are some really good gags in this movie. I will say, spoilers, the movie ends with a little title card that says "For Ivan," which means they can't make another one until somebody else from the original like movies dies. Because they need to end each one of these with a who it's for that died.
Wait, didn't the last one end before Ivan?
No, the last one ended with Afterlife ends with For Harold.
Oh, and
this one is
that's
for
right.
Ivan.
That's right. You're right. Okay. Right.
Yeah. So now they need like for that Dan seems likely. Or for
that seems
Bill.
Likely.
Yeah.
That seems likely.
So I have to wait.
I guess I'm going to go see it this week. I don't really want to, but I guess I'm going to.
It's got some good bits. It's got some good bits.
But you saw that tweet I retweeted of the guy saying, "God damn it, Ghostbusters is not a comedy. It
yes. has
comedic moments." And I feel like that is the tone of these new sequels, right? That it's people don't realize the original's a comedy. They have just no idea it was a comedy.
This one leans more into being a comedy, I think. Like this one, there's a lot in this one. There's a lot of like moments of like remember in the originals how great this was. There is stuff like that, but this one doesn't have that Amblin feel to it that Afterlife had, or that like this is holy material kind of feel to right. it. You know, it's much more like it feels much more like a Ghostbusters movie than Afterlife did. Okay. I think, you know, like at one point. Spoilers, I guess. At one point, Venkman, they're in the firehouse, and Venkman walks up to a fuse box and opens it and takes out a bottle of like whiskey and just starts drinking it.
Right.
You know, it's like clearly that's been there since the 80s kind of joke, right? Like he just hit booze all around. And it's like, that's fun. That's a fun little
right.
bit, you know? But like, yeah, it's more stuff like that. Although, I mean, there are still, it's still not, you know, it takes itself a little too seriously, but what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? All right. We got any news this week?
We do. What do we got? Anthony Mackie revealed that there will be no Winter Soldier in his Captain America movie and no Zemo.
People said that this was a problem, but I feel like Winter Soldier is making his own movie right now. So it doesn't feel like it's like Marvel collapse. It feels like the guy's the lead of a different movie.
Yeah. Well, he's not right? the lead.
I mean, he kind of probably is, though, right?
No, he's not.
Thunderbolts?
No, he's not.
How do you know?
Because he's talked about it. Sebastian Stan has been like, yeah, I'm not really in it that much. The ongoing theory is that Winter Soldier is going to die early on in the movie.
Be interesting. He complained, though, about no Captain America Falcon and Winter Soldier season 2. And yes. it's like, buddy, you got a movie. Like, that's better than a TV show.
He's like, I like making the show because I got to hang out with like two cool people, and now I'm making this movie and it's not as much fun.
Everybody
that's a
sucks
real
here.
ding on the rest of the cast of that movie.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. Like,
yeah.
They're really coming for Harrison Ford here. It's pretty fucked up.
Yeah. here's what he said. He said, when they decided to go back to the movies, it is what it is, but I don't have my friends anymore, so it kind of dampens it a little bit.
Wow. That's crazy. Imagine they go to set the next day with this guy.
Yeah, that's rough. Well, not the next day, because they're currently not filming while they rewrite the entire movie.
So. I love it. Yeah. Oh, I love it.
Oh. And then the Penguin trailer came out.
I would ask you what you thought about it, but there's not that much to talk about, right?
I'm really... Why is he called the Penguin?
I guess we'll find out in this TV program.
Will we? Because he's called the Penguin in The Batman.
I think this is a prequel, though, isn't it?
No, I don't think so.
No?
I don't think so.
It sounded like a prequel when Colin Farrell was talking about it.
Maybe it's a mix. I don't know. But either way, like, he doesn't look like a penguin. He doesn't wear a tuxedo. Like, like, the trailer was good. I was like, oh, this looks good. But, like, it looks like something where, like, oh, we're going to take this IP and just do something, like, make something. Like, it's not really connected to what the character is, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that probably a lot of this is about respect for Burgess Meredith. They can just never top that, so they have to just go a totally different direction.
I guess. I guess they're like Burgess Meredith did the whole smoking the cigarette and going wah, wah, wah all the time. And then Danny DeVito did the whole flipper hands and like biting off people's noses and saying unlimited poontang. So we can't go that way either. So what are we going to do?
It's tough. I don't disagree with you, but I really like the Penguin and the Batman. So I can't, like, it's like I'm excited for the show because I like Colin Farrell in that role. He was really great. And I think that
absolutely fantastic. And the trailer looks good, but I'm watching, I'm like, this feels like they were like, oh, we want to make something, but no one's going to watch it unless it's connected to an IP. So we'll make it the Penguin. You know, and that's fine. I got no overall problem with that, I suppose. I'm real interested to see if they ever explain why he's called the Penguin.
I mean, maybe I am curious now that you bring it up. I am curious. But yeah, it's like hard for me to complain about it too much because I thought he was so good in The Batman, and the idea of like an 8-episode Colin Farrell fucking shit up crime show.
Yeah.
In that crazy fat suit. Like, I don't know. I'm kind of like all about it.
Doing his Nesta Nero impersonation.
Yeah. Like, I kind of like am all about it. So like, I agree with you. I do agree. Like, this should be maybe more penguin-y, or there should be a more clear penguin connection. But at the same time, like, well, whatever, it's fucking rules. So I mean, like, yeah,
no, so, I'm looking forward to it, but, and that trailer I think was really, really good, but I was just like, when I was watching, I was like, why is he called a penguin? There's got to be a reason. So who knows? Who knows? They can be like, when I was a boy, I wanted to be an ice skater. And all the kids around said he moves around on the ice like a penguin.
That was his favorite garanimal, was the penguin. He wore the penguin garanimal underwear. Yeah. that's the story. That's the origin story of the penguin now.
There you go. We shall see.
Oh, man. What else we got?
That's it. That's all the news.
That's all we got, huh?
That's all we got. Very quiet.
That's a sad week.
I guess so.
That it should be so quiet. There's a lot of rumors that Franklin Richards is going to be in the Fantastic Four movie.
Yeah.
And people were like, oh, it's too soon. I was like, get the fuck out of here. Like, no, make this begin with them having – my understanding is it begins with them having been around for a minute. Like,
okay,
they have been around. So yeah. I think that is a great choice. I think it makes them feel really different from everybody else in the Marvel Universe.
Sure.
You know what I mean? They got a fucking kid who's super powerful. That's a very exciting, different angle that isn't the same old shit. And I always like the Fantastic Four as a real family, and I think that's a really good shortcut to making it be that way.
Yes.
Also,
people really like the little baby in The Incredibles. So
there you go. Yep. Oh, I think Franklin will be older than that.
Probably.
The other big rumor this week is that Seth Rogen is writing and producing an animated R-rated Venom.
Oh.
Which is terrific. That's a great idea.
A movie or a show?
Movie. Cartoon movie.
Is he also going to voice Venom?
I don't know. He would actually do a pretty good job of voicing Venom. I kind of would enjoy that, actually.
I'd like to see Venom having his laugh.
I kind of would like that.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that's interesting. I think that's kind of cool. And if Sony's got to keep fucking mining this IP, better to do it that way. You know what I mean? Like, instead of like trying to like find some random Spider-Man villain to make a movie about.
Sure.
So I think that that is, pretty great. There's a Spider-Verse animated short coming.
Okay.
It is going to be debut on YouTube next week, I think. That's a thing to look out for. We're not getting the sequel to Spider-Verse anytime soon, but we are getting this short film.
That, by the way, the sequel to Spider-Verse was supposed to come out this week.
This week, yeah, I know. It was never going to happen. It was never. They hadn't even written it. It was like when they announced it, it was crazy. Keep your eyes open for that. And that is from the Spider-Verse people. That's like not like some other thing. That's, they made this. This is a thing that they made. So definitely keep an eye out for that. Gosh, I guess that's... Oh, the other thing is that X-Men 97 debuted with 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah. Wow.
I think that the review base for that is probably easier than the review base for a movie. I think the people that are getting assigned to review a cartoon are probably not the same people who are getting assigned to review a movie, especially a big blockbuster movie. You're... maybe send in more of your better people to do that. So I thought it was great. I don't have a problem with the 100%. I just am not like 100. I'm not fully certain.
46 reviews.
That's a lot of reviews. That's a good, it's not
46.
60 is what you want for certified.
No, but what I'm saying is compared to like a movie.
Oh, there's 150, 200 reviews. Yeah.
So I
thought that was interesting.
It is got 92 for audience score.
I know. Well, people are always going to get mad. Well, you know, it's we'll talk about it when we talk about the show, but people are mad that it's woke. It's so incredible. So it's a big hit. When that is one of the reasons
why. This guy gave it 2 stars because there are commercials.
There are not.
Disney Plus.
That feels like that's his own cheapness getting in the way there.
He says 2 to 3 minutes of commercials every 8 minutes or so. That's called television. like I don't know what to tell you. Yeah.
Well, pay an extra couple of bucks a month and they won't be there.
I will say, it does depend though on like how the commercials enter into the show. If it's between scenes, that's fine. It's the middle of a scene. That'd be terrible.
Yeah, I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they do it on. I pay enough money to get Disney Plus with no commercials. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm watching Three Body Problem.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I made a good Three Body Problem joke and nobody liked it on Twitter.
I bet it was great. What was it?
I put a picture of Triplicate Girl from Legion of Superheroes and I said the original Three Body Problem.
That's just a Buddy Todd joke. That's not for anybody else.
Nope. It's for me and him.
That's it. I mean, I get it, but like that is not a joke for the public. That is not a joke for the public at all. There's people who have no fucking clue what you're talking about.
I thought it was
fucking actually weird. I saw this too, and on top of it, it was like a scene where she's like just like a regular person talking to Supergirl, I think. Even more confusing that she like, you know. So anyway. Well,
I chose that because she's saying what her powers are there, so it was clear to anyone that doesn't know who Triplicate Girl is.
Okay. She's a member of the Legion of Superheroes for the folks at home.
Yes. And one of her three bodies died and she became Duo Damsel.
So, Three Body Problem, pretty good. I'm on episode 5 of 8.
Oh.
I haven't read the novel. The novel is literally sitting next to me on my desk right now where it's been sitting for the past 6 years. It's just one of those books. Like, everybody said it was great. I bought it and it's just been sitting here. But the show's pretty good. Episode 5 has violence of the kind that if you were in the room with me when it happened, the amount of cackling that I was doing throughout the entire scene of intense violence, you would be terrified of me.
Yeah.
Because I laugh at over-the-top violence. Like, I laugh a lot. Like, the gorier and wilder it is, yeah, the more I laugh. And in episode 5, the violence, and it's supposed to be, like, horrifying.
Yeah.
Like, kids are getting killed.
Yeah.
And I am fucking howling. Because I'll tell you off the air, because I don't want to spoil it for anybody. I know you're not going to watch it, but it was fucking incredible. It's a pretty good show. I like it. It's not like the greatest show of all time. That is Shogun. Have you caught up on Shogun? Or are you still behind?
I'm not. No, I'm still behind.
But it's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's pretty well done. I can tell already that it's not as smart as the book. I can tell they're really dumbing it down because the book is hard sci-fi.
Okay.
And so it's like a lot of really big sci-fi concepts that they're like barely touching here.
Yeah.
That makes me want to read the book, actually. You know what I mean? So I'm like, oh, what are the big physics concepts that like they're really just skirting around in this? But it's pretty great. Do you want to know what it's about?
Sure.
Because I didn't even know what it was about. It's about an alien.
For 6 years, shelf, you don't know what it's about.
I had no idea what it's about. I knew there was a murder thing happening in it, like, and there were like deaths, and there was like physics.
There's at least three bodies, and there's some kind of problem.
There's not three bodies. It's about an alien invasion.
Oh.
It is about an alien species that comes. They're on their way to Earth to take over.
Okay.
And they're going to be here in 400 years.
Oh, you got some time.
And they are able to communicate with us.
So they gave us a heads up. They're like, hey, we're coming.
No, the premise is that somebody invites them. And then they were like, they're like building up like a sort of a religious group to meet them, you know, like
okay,
to prepare the way for them. It's smart, you know, it's like smart. It's really well done. The three body problem of the title, this is a little bit of a spoiler for the people who haven't watched it yet, but it's actually a well-known physics thing. It's the problem of you can't predict the physics of a trinary star system. The physics gets so complicated that it's impossible to know what's going to happen.
Okay.
And so in the show, the aliens, their planet is in a trinary star system. And that means that their planet is just fucked all the time because like either they're too close to a sun or they're too far from a sun or the gravity's fucked up because of how the suns are lined up. And so that's why they want to come to Earth.
Ah.
Yeah.
So, my joke was more that there's at least three characters in the show.
Apparently there's a lot fewer characters in the show than there are in the novel. They really condensed it very tightly.
Okay.
That's my understanding. So, but I'm really enjoying it. It's really, you know, it's not like the greatest thing of all time. Some of the acting isn't like 100%. It is, did you watch any Game of Thrones?
I watched the entire original series. Yeah.
Okay. So you remember Sam Tarly?
Yes.
The fat guy?
Yeah.
He's in this and he's playing a Nick Frost character kind of.
Oh, okay.
So it's like not quite as intense as a Nick Frost character, but like a
Nick
real
Frost, role. Okay. Like I was gonna ask, like is he like Mike in Spaced or is he like Nick Frost in World's End?
I mean, he's closer to like Nick Frost in Sean, sort of, except that he's very rich.
Okay.
But he's like kind of like a man child who's like runs off at the mouth all the time and says inappropriate stuff, and you know.
Okay.
He gets to be funny, which is nice because that was not the vibe of that guy on Game of Thrones.
No.
So anyway, okay, I guess that's it. That's everything we got for news. Do we got jokes?
I laughed, by the way. Speaking of violent scenes that lead to laughter, at the end of Immaculate, I was laughing, and the other people in the theater did not seem to appreciate that.
I know. I haven't watched it yet either. I know I'm going to fucking giggle my way through the whole end of that movie.
No, I don't think you will.
No?
No. No. It's not a super violent movie. There's like three violent scenes.
Well, if it has a crazy thing at the end, though, even if it's not violent, it's
crazy. The ending is bonkers. I was like, this should have been the whole movie, but what are you gonna do?
That's what everybody says. So the, you know, this is famously, it was a script that Sydney Sweeney came across and decided that she wanted to make, even though it couldn't get funded 10 years ago. And she produced it, kept on it. And apparently when she finally got it made, they had the script and they were like, we need a better ending. And so they changed it. It's not the original ending of the script.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. And the director came up with it apparently. And every review I've heard is, boy, the rest of the movie should have partied as hard as the end of this movie.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Because watching the movie, I was like, why did she want to make this? And then it got to the end thing, I was like, oh, I see why.
Because that wasn't in the script.
But that wasn't there. So I'm
I don't know what the original ending was, so I can't tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got jokes.
No, we don't.
We do trivia now?
We do. Yeah, we've been doing it for a while now.
Trivia. Oh, yeah, you're right. What am I going to do?
What supervillain was originally called Mr. Zero?
What are my options?
There are no options. Remember, this one is just the question and the answer.
I don't know.
Mr. Freeze.
Huh. What do you know? That's interesting. Yep. More like Plain Zero.
I guess.
Yeah. No, remember from Running Man? Sub-Zero. No. More like Plain Zero.
No, I don't remember.
And that's Mr. Freeze saying it, too.
There you go. Where did Stanley Ipkiss originally find the mask?
Oh, I don't know anything about the mask.
An antique shop.
Good for him. That's because he's antique. That's nice.
Yeah. What energy acts as a source of power for the Flash and other super speed powered characters?
The Speed Force.
The Speed Force.
All right. Now you ready to talk about the first two episodes of X-Men 97?
I am.
Let's do it. X-Men 97, Season 1, Episodes 1 and 2, To Me, My X-Men, and then the other one. What's the other one called?
X-Men To Me. I have no idea.
Anyway. So we get the new version of the theme song, and it's kind of pretty much it's the old version of the theme song, right? They did not want to fuck with something that worked.
I meant to look this up to see if it was longer, because I feel like it's almost comically longer.
It does feel longer.
I mean, there's more characters and stuff, right? So I think that's why. But like, I felt like I remember the original one having like the, you know, the whole thing, and then there's the and then it ended like that was like, and this one it does the and then starts over. And I don't know. I can't remember if in the original it does the same thing or not. But when that happened, I was like, that's kind of funny that there's this whole lead up and then the song just restarts.
I will say we were watching X-Men, the animated series for this podcast a while ago. We didn't really particularly like it. However, that theme song is good.
That theme song is amazing. It's a great theme song. And it's a great opening credit sequence, which is why they just recreate the entire opening credit sequence. Like, it's fantastic.
So it's very interesting. There's something really interesting about this show, which is that when they announced it, I could not have been less interested because I was like, oh, this nostalgia bullshit. And then when you do the opening credits, and it's the same opening credits, you're like, oh my God, they went out of their way just to recreate the opening credits. However, we'll get this out of the way up front. Like, I don't think I've ever seen nostalgia utilized as well as it is utilized in this show. In that it is quite clearly a show made by people who are nostalgic for the old X-Men cartoon, but and who want to make this look and feel like the old X-Men cartoon as much as they can, but who have decided, what if the old X-Men cartoon was well written?
Yes.
And said, what if we deviated from the nostalgia right there? Because like they do all the shit. There's a scene in this first episode where they're in Hank Pym's lab and his books say DNA, medicine, yes. Volume 1, medicine.
Science. What did it just say? Science.
Yeah, that's just classic X-Men 90s bullshit where they just didn't care and they just put words on a fucking book. They were not like doing anything intelligent because they thought, kids, what do they know? But it doesn't feel condescending or stupid. It feels funny. It feels like a little bit of a wink that in this universe they have books that are just called DNA.
My favorite moment of that kind of thing is when they're talking to that UN lady who's on her treadmill and she's got a whole slideshow ready for them that she's showing like flashbacks to like previous stuff that has happened in the old series, I guess. And I was like, that's pretty funny that she prepared an entire thing for this. I really appreciated that.
So the show opens about a year after the death of Charles Xavier in the finale of the original series. And we have
that's how the original series ended.
And we have I told you to watch it. we have a TV report that kind of catch up speed. Henry Peter Garrett killed him. And that now, because of Xavier died, sort of public opinion on the mutants have changed. People kind of like mutants a little bit more now. Except it doesn't really matter. Not everybody, because the Friends of Humanity still remain a bunch of bigoted pieces of shit. And we see some Friends of Humanity pull in a mutant into a warehouse. And it is none other than Sunspot.
Yeah.
Roberto Da Costa.
One of the classics. He's got a sweet coat. He's got a sweet jacket.
I think they did a really great job with Roberto Da Costa in this. Yeah, because he's like a little fucking rich boy. And yes. I think that's a part that like is not always easy to get. And I think they did a pretty good job of getting it.
He's like, yeah, just, you know, contact my family. They'll pay whatever you want.
Yeah. That's the thing. When he wakes up in the mansion, he's like, okay, great. This is the part where you need money from me. Right. And yeah. I just really kind of like that. Like, I like the way that it's done. So the Friends of Humanity have him, they have him collared, and, they got a buyer. They're using him for target practice, it says. Who knows what the actual story is? So they are going to shoot him with some weapons, and then that's when all of a sudden shit starts going down, and the X-Men show up. These guys have Sentinel blasters. They have tech, like some kind of tech that is made from the Sentinel gun. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then Storm and Bishop show up, and then Cyclops blows in, and Cyclops fucking kicks ass.
Cyclops fucking came to play. That's all there is to it. Yeah.
It is wild how he comes in and he's using his beams to like slide around the floor and shit like that. Like
that's
it is
awesome.
And he's using it as kung fu, where he's like a guy's gonna hit him and he blasts the guy's elbow. Yeah. So that the guy, you know, can't bring the blow in and stuff like that. It's really fucking incredible.
Yeah, it was very, very cool. It was very cool. I dug it.
We discussed this off the air, but I worry that they actually went a little too far with Cyclops.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think that they might have badassed Cyclops a little bit more, to the point that maybe if he's not this kind of a badass in the movies or the comics, people are going to be like, wait, what happened to him? I don't know. Well,
I mean, here's the thing, and we might discuss this more later, but watching this, I was like, If there's no reason superhero movies don't have action scenes like this, don't have fight scenes like this. Like, I don't understand why they in the movies, Marvel or DC, they're always so much more flat than what you see in an animated thing. And it's like, there's no reason for that. Like, it doesn't make sense. There's no reason that this can't be done in live action, especially when 99.9% of the shit is CG anyway. Like, just do it. Just have this kind of stuff. Have, you know, all of this, and it'll be a blast, and we'll all have fun, and it'll be great. And now with this, they have to do stuff like this with the X-Men movie. Otherwise, why are you fucking bothering?
Right. I mean, I don't disagree. I mean, I think that the stakes have been raised. But I think what's really interesting about Cyclops here is that I think they kind of nailed Cyclops as a character, not just like his powers or his moves, but like as a guy.
Yes.
And he's a character that I think it's been really hard for people over the years to use correctly. It happens every now and again, but it never happened in the movies. And I don't think it happened that much on the cartoon. I don't think the cartoon did a great job with him. I think that he was kind of an annoying pain in the ass. I think having no Professor X is a big plus for him.
Sure.
Like actually being a leader. I think makes it feel a little bit more. So like at one point it looks like maybe, Cyclops is going to get taken out. He gets tied up by a Sentinel. They have a giant Sentinel arm in there. But then Cyclops just lets his whole fucking blast go and blows the whole thing up.
He's like, no, don't do that. And then he opens his eyes and
He goes, no, don't do that. And then he goes, Not.
It's the 90s.
It is the 90s indeed. That is totally era appropriate. So I'm all about it. And then in the explosion, the Daily Bugle flies by.
Yes.
That was interesting.
I guess.
Spider-Man is on the cover. It says, is Spider-Man a mutant?
Sure.
So that's kind of fascinating. I mean, like the old X-Men cartoon did have Marvel heroes doing cameos. I am curious if Marvel views this new series as like ground zero for an animated MCU.
That'd be interesting.
You know what I mean? Like just like spin everybody out of this.
Yeah.
Or if they're going to give everybody, and there's another different Spider-Man show that's not going to be connected to this for Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. Now it's called Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. We go back to the X-Mansion and Cyclops is mad because Gambit didn't come help, but Gambit is too busy wearing a crop top and making beignets.
Yes. Apparently people online are very upset by the crop top. I'm not sure why. It's very fitting for the character and for the time.
It is a total 90s look. Yeah, it's a total 90s look. And it's like what they don't get is that it's kind of a jock look.
Yes.
Like that is not like gay. That is not gay in the 90s.
No.
That's Dan Cortez on MTV Sports. Like that is like that is the deal. Like I think people
that's Johnny Depp on 21 Jump Street. Like
Yeah, 100%.
That's the two Coreys in Teen Beat. Like
Yeah. No, that's the vibe. I mean, like they're totally correct. Now, I will say this show is incredibly gay. Sure. I mean, even for X-Men, by X-Men standards, this show is astonishingly. There are some poses that Magneto makes that are unreal. What sassy gay poses they are!
Magneto is the kind of character that if there's any like young people, like 10, 11, 12, whatever, questioning their sexuality and they see Magneto, they have their answer is what it comes down to. Like they know now what their sexuality is.
But so we realize that things on the team are not great because Cyclops wants to like do work and turns out everybody else wants to fuck around all the time. Rogue is like, whatever, man, who gives a shit? I mean, I guess
they got a basketball court. They're good to go.
I guess making beignets is pretty good work.
I guess.
Then Professor X comes into the room.
And but it's German.
It's just Morph. And then the big surprise is Jean Grey comes in, and she is pregnant.
She is very pregnant.
She's very pregnant. She's going to give birth any day now.
Yep.
So a lot has happened in the year since we last saw these characters, or the 30 years. Which is crazy. That's really nuts when you think about it, by the way.
Yeah.
Because I remember the show came out and I was too old for it.
It's wild to me that this started and there's not even like a previously on showing the old cartoon to catch you up. I thought that was interesting.
I feel like it does two things. One, it does a pretty good job of catching you up as you watch.
Oh, very much so. Very much so. I there was nothing in it where I was like, what? What's going on? Huh?
And the other thing it does. By that. It does a really good job. I think when we talk about this off the air, I think it's got real Chris Claremont energy where the characters walk into rooms, announce who they are, and announce what they do.
Yes.
Or they have action scenes where characters will announce who they are and what they do. And yes. That's
like, I mean, so like the opening credits shows you each character and their name.
Right.
Right.
I mean,
so
like,
you have that covered. But then, like, when Storm first shows up, like, with the Friends of Humanity holding Sunspot. And like, you know, you see their breath come out and then you hear her go, it is I, Storm. It's like, there she is. Like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but every character does it again and again and again. It's like, I will use my this to do this. And that's Chris Claremont dialogue. And it's a lost art in comic books. And I know that people roll their eyes at it. But I think when you read old Claremont X-Men or watch some of the old cartoons, you go, oh, this is very clear. Like, I mean,
you could pick up any issue and know what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, because everybody's going to give a little soliloquy about themselves. They're always going to stop and say, you know, when I met so and so 10 years ago, and they'll do that. They'll do that bit because that's how you tell the audience what's up.
Yes. Yeah. And it's funny because it's something like I used to always look at it as like that's a good thing to do for new readers coming in. And as I get older, I'm like, that's a good thing for me because I can't remember everything that happened last month in the comic.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't always remember. I'm not reading these things back to back. So like it really helps. And I have a lot of things going on in my life. So it really helps when I come back to read it. If you give me a little bit of a gentle nudge by a character saying that was just like last week when we did this, like, okay, I remember that now.
Yeah.
And you can write that again. I've been rereading the Claremont X-Men and it's not badly written. It's like a little it's a little overwritten, but like it's not bad. His dialogue's not bad. It's good dialogue. It's like a lot of it.
Yeah.
But also it makes you feel like you're eating a meal. You're really getting a whole fucking read. Like there's like you're not skimming through those comics.
And I mean there's like Claremont sometimes I think went a little overboard with that stuff, but like you know, Mark Waid is still out there writing comics, and every month in his books, he does a good job recapping what happened the month before in like a page or two without it feeling like it's just a recap. Like, you know, a good writer knows how to do that and how to put it in there without it feeling annoying or like overdone or like whatever, you know. So get on it, writers. Do it. It's fun.
Gene reminds everybody, hey, we got a guest in the house. Can we not be such jackasses all the fucking time? And speaking of that guest, he does wake up. This is very similar to Jubilee waking up, right? Beast is playing opera and hanging around, hanging off the ceiling. And blabbers at him. Jubilee's there. Jubilee is the character I think they did the most updating to visually.
Yeah.
She's more clearly Asian now, I think. I mean, she's always Asian, but she's much more clearly Asian now. Yeah. And I think that she just looks smoother, kind of. I don't know. I can't quite explain.
She's also, I think, the only one with a new voice actor.
Is that what part of the deal is?
Yes.
No, Jean Grey is a new voice actor.
Oh, is Jean Grey a new voice actor, too?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. I know she was because – and I imagine it's because the original voice actor was not Asian. And they were like, you can't do that today. So – we're going to have to get an actor to do Jubilee.
So Cyclops and Storm show up. They try to get some information out of Roberto about the Friends of Humanity. He doesn't know shit. And he just wants to go home. Storm says, hey, you know what? We're going to hold on to you for a minute because they're still looking for you. So they're going to kill you if they find you. So why don't we just like hold you up for a day? And this is when he does. He's like, okay, I get it. Now it's time that you're going to ask me for money. Fine. How much do you want? Jubilee takes him to the danger room.
Yeah, this is very confusing to me.
Why?
They have no idea what his powers are.
No.
He's not shown any powers. And they're like, I guess we'll just go have you fight a sentinel in the danger room. First off, why? Because he's made it clear he doesn't want to be here. So, like, why bring him to the danger room? Second, why not ask him, hey, what are your powers before you put him in that situation?
So the reason why is because she's trying to convince him it's cool here. And so she thinks the danger room's cool, which it is, by the way.
It's very cool.
Except he doesn't think so. He thinks it's so fucking lame. could not be more bored with this video game.
No.
And then it's Magneto. And then it's a Sentinel. And then Wolverine jumps on him. And Roberto's like, oh, I'm supposed to be scared now. And then Wolverine turns off the fucking danger room. And Roberto realizes that actually there is a fucking little feral Canadian with two claws around the side of his head.
Yes.
I really like that very much. I thought that was very funny. I really like how they're handling Wolverine in the show.
Yes.
Because he is not a main character necessarily. He's just kind of a grumpy pain in the ass the whole time.
Like he's exactly what he was great at being in the comics.
Yeah.
Where he's not the main focus. He's got his own things going on. But he's mainly there just to like fuck shit up and be moody.
So Gene, Scott is looking at a picture of the original class of the X-Men, the original five X-Men. And he's admiring it. And then Gene comes in and they talk about the old days. And she's like, what if we just like left and like these people could take care of themselves? We have a kid coming. What if we just gave this kid like a better life than living in a place that is being attacked by Sentinels and Magneto every 6 weeks? And in the middle of this conversation, a fucking basketball comes flying through the window.
Well, this also is a great touch of the old 90s show that works, where they look at Xavier's death certificate and it just says like certificate of death, Charles Xavier. And then that's it. And the date. I was like, that's great. That's
perfect. Well, I like later on, they have Charles Xavier's last will and testament. It's a fucking tome. It's a giant book. It's like one of those Cerebus phone books. It's enormous, exactly. Man. Yeah. So fucking big.
The last will and testament of Charles Xavier, Omnibus, volume one.
I love it. It doesn't have to be real. Like what can be heightened.
Yeah.
The basketball crashes through the window, knocks the picture off the wall. They run outside. Wolverine has freaked out Sunspot so bad that he left.
Yes.
Cyclops is, you like, you dumb asshole. He's like, put that Runty little nose of yours to good use. Go find him. Jubilee, Gambit, Rogue, Morph, go help. And Logan has a little bit of a thing because Logan knows that Scott and Gina are going to leave. He can tell. He knows it's going to happen. Yeah. And he's jealous. They really reiterate how small Logan is here. He is like yelling at Scott. He's like looking up at a guy who's 2 feet taller than him.
Yes. Well, they cut to a close up of Jean and it's looking up at Jean and she's like, Wolverine, please. And then it cuts to a close up of Wolverine and it's looking down at him. And it's very much to remind us, I think, that everyone is taller than him.
Everybody's taller than him.
Yeah.
Scott says, so they go off to look for Roberto. Scott says, we're going to have to go talk to Henry Peter Gierek to get some information because Bolivar Trask is obviously behind all this. So the main team goes off. They go to a club. They go to a dance club. It's very enjoyable.
Yes.
Very enjoyable. And then this is a good example of how the show works and how the X-Men under Claremont works, is that Rogue and Gambit are hanging out and they're looking at the crowd. And we see people like grabbing each other and dancing dirty and being sexy. And Rogue gives the speech about how sad she is that she can't do that.
Yes.
And it's great. Like, it's just, it's perfect. Like, you find an actual point where it makes sense in the story for her to reiterate this. And then you knock it down as a character moment. And then you have also the character moment of Gambit being like, I don't care. I'm so horny for you that you can take my brain and my energy anytime.
Yes.
I mean, nobody's been hornier for somebody than Gambit is for Rogue, frankly.
Dude, the closest would be Wolverine for Jean.
I mean, I guess if Wolverine killed Scott.
Yes.
Because Gambit will let nothing stand in the way. Like, there's nothing that will stand in his way.
Yeah. I do appreciate that Gambit appears to be drinking a rum and coke with a straw. Like a big straw. So I was like, oh. I appreciated that.
So Wolverine and Morph are hanging out, and Morph shows up as Jean Grey just to fuck at Wolverine a little bit, because Morph is truly an asshole.
He really is.
And so we get more like information about the love triangle. So again, if you've never watched this thing, you can get a really good sense of like what everybody's relationship is. But Jubilee finds Roberto.
This is when Wolverine reveals that he knows that Scott and Jean are leaving.
He says it's coming.
He says my favorite line of the two episodes.
Yeah.
School's no place for a baby. I mean, it fits in the moment, and he's talking about like a school of mutants and like that, but like it's just a funny line to me. Like, school's no place for a baby.
And then Jubilee finds Roberto, and they dance. They have a dance sequence. She does her little Jubilee blasts, and Roberto sees that it could be fun to be a mutant. Because it turns out that Roberto's whole deal is that his family does not know he's a mutant, and they would not like it if they knew. Yeah. So he is dealing with the fact that he's a closeted mutant. And here he is at a clearly gay club, getting the chance to let loose just a little bit. Cyclops and Storm go to prison and they meet up with Henry
Peter and Bishop, who just stands there in the little room. I don't know why he went. I'm not sure why he's on the team. He does nothing throughout these two episodes.
I mean, he does actually some pretty cool stuff like with his powers, which he did not do a lot in the original show. So Henry Peter Gierek's like, fuck you, I'm not telling you anything. And then so Cyclops is like, okay, Jean, fucking rip it out of his brain. He's like, listen, this is not what Xavier would have done, but I'm not Xavier. And so she gets in and
I like it though, Chris. He's like, what do you think you're gonna get it out of me? He goes, not me. My wife.
That's
great. That was great. I appreciated that.
She goes into his brain and she sees this vision of a new master mold. It's in the desert. But then also something else happens. She goes, there's somebody else in here, and she sees her baby, and there's an explosion, like an end of the world explosion. So something is off. Something is crazy. So
she sees her baby. She sees a field of graves.
Right.
And then a sentinel head comes out with like a skull for a face, and it says, I am Death, Destroyer of Mutants. And then it blows up everything. And it's like, that's pretty awesome. That's a good little sequence.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty cool.
I am Death, Destroyer of Mutants.
The Blackbird flies out to the Sahara Desert. And as they're flying, a fucking sentinel comes out of nowhere and tears it to pieces. And this is like one of the best sequences of the whole fucking show. Yeah. Because Scott gets taken out of the cockpit by the Sentinel, and he's like blasting it, and then he gets dropped and he's just falling, and then the whole ship gets taken to pieces, and so everybody's falling, and they got a couple of flyers on the team. So the couple of flyers got to help the ones that don't fly. A Morph turns into Archangel to to help out.
He grabs Wolverine, and Rogue grabs Bishop and Beast, right?
And you know, the Storm can fly too. So we got that, but nobody gets Scott. And Scott says, "See you down there."
And at first, see you down there.
And at first, like, what the fuck? And then he fucking uses his eye beams to slow his fucking descent and do, I mean, legitimately one of the greatest superhero landings of all time. Like, it's like Dragon Ball Z shit. It's like crazy.
Unbeatable. Like, this is like, I don't know where in the process they are into making an X-Men movie at this point, but there's no way you watch the scene and aren't like, okay, this has to be in the movie, right? Like, we have to just redo this in the movie. Like, this is the coolest goddamn thing ever.
What I really like about this episode is that they
use... That's when Captain America does it. Like,
yeah, no, it's crazy. When they really go out of their way to be like, no, Scott's beam is not a laser beam. Scott's beam is not a heat beam.
It's a concussive force beam. They fuck it up in the next episode.
Do they?
Yeah.
When?
We'll get to it. I have it in mind.
No, tell me right now because I want to know.
When they're fighting the Executioner and they're like, his suit can absorb energy. And then Scott shoots him and absorbs energy. It's like, no, his beam is a concussive beam. It's not an energy beam.
Concussion is energy.
But it should knock him back. They're talking about like laser shots and stuff. And then that happens. It should be, he should get knocked back by that, by a concussive blast.
Hmm. Interesting. I'm curious because
you punch him and he falls back. So why wouldn't a concussive blast like that hit him?
That's a good point. Okay, the point is taken. There's a master mold here in the desert, and so they show up, and Trask is there, and he's like, "You guys are fucking dead," and all these Sentinels come up, and the classic music starts. And then all of a sudden, Storm has not been there yet. And then the Sentinels go, Omega level threat detected. And then she fucking turns the desert into glass. Again,
that's awesome.
It's so awesome. It's like, it is power creep. I mean, this is stuff that they can do, but I get concerned. It really is Dragon Ball Z, like where the power creep becomes so extreme that they're like throwing guys through planets and shit like that. And so I don't know how you keep topping it week after week, and I don't know how you top it in the movies and stuff like that, you know? She just shows up and fucking wrecks shit. This is the first time they mentioned Omega level mutants in the cartoon, I think, because they had not been invented yet when the show was on.
Well, there you go.
If I remember correctly. Because there was a storyline about the seven Omega level mutants, the most powerful mutants of all. Cannonball was one of them.
Yep. Now everyone's one of them.
Yeah, they've really just the X-Men story is all over the place. There's some really good action here. Gambit charges Wolverine's claws, and he uses that to take off the fucking head of Master Mold. The Beast gets into one of the fucking Sentinels and begins driving it.
Controls it, yep.
Very cool. Very fucking cool. I really fucking loved it. That was a really great action sequence.
There's some good rogues. Like, each of them has a good action moment in this sequence.
And it's all of them using their powers correctly. Like, that's the thing that I think was really impressive, was that this is not just, like, people flying around, but, Bishop is taking a lot of shots so that he can shoot energy back. Like, it's like they're doing it correctly, and they're letting us see each of them do their specialty. Just really good action writing.
Yeah.
I mean, I got to tell you, man, watching these two episodes, I can't imagine what the fuck the showrunner did to get fired.
He must have done something.
I mean, because I feel like you could be a pretty huge asshole when your work is this good. Like, I think that that's how it works in Hollywood. Like, when your work is this good, like, you get to really behave badly. So I cannot imagine what it was, because it is crazy to me this guy got fired, because these two episodes are fucking incredible.
Yeah. They have two seasons done, so
yeah. I mean, we got a bunch of them, yeah. But it's wild to me, though. Wild to me.
He must have done something that is like this. Now you're going to cost us money and problems. Like,
no, it had to be significant. It had to be significant.
Yeah.
It could not just have been he's a bitch to work with. Like, it just had to be heavier than that. They take out the Master Mold. They capture Bolivar Trask. And then, Val Cooper shows up and says, "Hey, X-Men, great work. Now that you guys work with the UN, that's how times have changed. We're going to dismantle this Master Mold." And Scott's like, "Yeah, I don't think you guys are doing that great a job at dismantling this ship, by the way, just in case you were curious." Back at the mansion, Jubilee's talking to Roberto. They're up in like the bell tower,
I guess. Yeah.
And she's like, "Hey, this could be your new home." And then he shows her his powers, and I don't really think that it fully sells. I like the bubbles, the effect of the bubbles. I thought was really good.
Yeah.
He's like, "I don't think I can live here." She's like, "No, this is like a family. Like, we accept you for who you are." And he's like, "That's pretty great, but my whole family doesn't know, and I just can't do this." And then he gives her such an incredible business card. It's not 97 appropriate. It's like an 87 business card, but I'll allow it because it was very funny.
Yes.
I thought it was very fucking funny. So everybody gets home and they're playing basketball and they're talking and hanging out. And Scott and Jean are about to make the announcement of the big situation they're in. And then all the alarms go off and they run. Somebody's in Xavier's office.
Great callback to the like 90s style of doing things is the alarms go off. Beast looks at his watch and it's just got a big X on it. And he says, "It says it's coming from Xavier's old office." It's like, I love that. I love it. I love stuff like that.
So they run into the office and holy shit, it's fucking Magneto. He's putting that old, it's so funny. They left and did not put that picture back up on the wall. They just left it on the floor.
They just left everything there. Yeah.
It's so funny. They came back, changed their clothes.
Fuck it.
Changed their clothes, played basketball. And, it was really fucking funny. It's Magneto and they're like, "What do you want, Magneto?" And he's like, "Everything." Because it turns out that Charles Xavier left Eric Lenscher everything in his will.
Well, this is such a good bit because, you know, when the episode starts, it said the title of the episode, "To Me, My X-Men." When Cyclops lands in the desert after the plane gets destroyed, he says, "To Me, My X-Men." I'm like, that's why it's called this, because it's such an awesome sequence showing how great Cyclops is. And then here, Magneto's in there and he explains to them that everything has been left to him in Xavier's last will and testament. And he says the last line is "He left it all to me, my X-Men." And it's like, that's great. Oh, that's so good. I loved it.
There's really good writing on this show, man.
Yeah.
Really good writing on this show. There's like really terrific, terrific writing on the show.
Yeah.
And that ends the first episode of X-Men 97. Which brings us, of course, to the second episode, Mutant Liberation Begins. And so the title sequence changes.
Yes, now Magneto is the first to appear.
Xavier is no longer in it. Magneto appears and Dark Phoenix shows up.
Yeah.
And then we also see Asteroid M.
Yes.
Which is pretty cool. And we open up with another news report. This time there's a Ferris wheel. I really appreciate this. This is like the kind of like podunk bullshit that I love on cartoons. Yeah. The Ferris wheel is out of control and it is falling over. And
there's just one kid on it.
And it's going to crush the news anchor. But then Magneto shows up and he saves everybody. And everybody's like, what? Magneto saving humans? And Scott and Jean are watching the news and they're like, what the fuck is up? Why would Professor X put this asshole in charge? We had heard that he was missing because he had started a mutant rebellion after the assassination. Everybody's sort of watching, Val Cooper's watching, the Friends of Humanity are watching. But they're also, we see the Friends of Humanity in the sewers. They are fucking with the Morlocks. They got Callisto and they got Leech and a couple others. And I think they're going to kill him, right?
It looks like it.
Magneto busts through the fucking wall. And he is like, hey, I am here to fuck your shit up because you're playing with these Morlocks. How dare you?
Like, he says, you won't even let them live in the indignity of your waste.
It's really good.
That's
really
a good line. Good. That's a really, good line.
Really good. He fucks him up pretty good. He puts a metal gag on somebody, which is like pretty hardcore. and then he comes back to the X-Men and he says, okay, so here's the deal. I worked with Genosha. I gave the Morlocks passage to Genosha. They're going to be safe there. And I didn't kill those bad guys.
Well, I made sure that they had passage to Genosha where they'll be safe. Don't know why you guys never thought about doing shit like that before.
It's really great because they're all like, yeah, that's actually a really good question, isn't it? Like, we probably should have been doing stuff like that previously. But that actually is not Xavier's dream.
No, that is not.
He doesn't, you know, it's really interesting. Somebody on Twitter.
But I do think if like Xavier not being like, hey, the mutants that live in the sewers, we should probably help them out a little bit more. They shouldn't have to live in the sewers.
The Morlocks have a weird deal because they kind of want to live in the sewers. Like,
yeah, that is their deal. Yeah.
But somebody on Twitter this week was like, Magneto would be pro-Palestine. And everybody was like, are you out of your fucking mind? Like, not only is Magneto a fucking Holocaust survivor, he lived in Israel. He did Israeli black ops, and his whole deal is separation from the rest of the world. He wants a mutant Zionist state, basically.
Yes.
He doesn't want to share with people, with humans. It's the opposite. And it was like crazy that somebody like, he would be pro-Palestine. Like, there's not a fucking chance on earth he would be pro-Palestine. No way.
This whole deal is like, hey, we should wipe out all of humanity because they're mean to mutants.
Yeah, like, I mean, like, there's just not a chance. But that's what's interesting here is that because his first reaction is, let's get them to a special mutant nation. And I think that was never Xavier's deal, really.
No.
I mean, obviously, it did become his deal in the comics because they had Krakoa. Yeah. But it took Xavier a long time to get there, and he got there eventually with the idea that by having their own nation, they could have a place among nations.
Yes.
As opposed to, like, trying to just have their own place and like fuck off from the rest of the world. Because like in the Krakoa storylines, they were providing medicine and stuff to the rest of the world. So he wanted to be part of the world.
If we have a place, if we have our own nation, then we're part of the United Nations. We are a governmental thing to deal with and blah, 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 blah. Right. Like, yeah, that gives us a bigger seat at the table. Makes us more important. Right. Like,
Although Genosha does sort of get that in this. So, so he said, I didn't kill these guys. I really wanted to fucking kill these guys. But I'm trying to prove that I'm working for Xavier's dream, not for mine. I'm trying to live up to the challenge of my friend. And like, it's a good thing. It makes a lot of sense. Like in terms of like, why would you do this? It's like, well, because he kind of wants to prove Xavier wrong a little bit, kind of. Like, I can do it. Or he wants to prove him right. I'm not really. It's like
he wants to do kind of like a superior Spider-Man maneuver. Is how I felt about it. Is like I'm going to do it better than he. Could.
Yeah, yeah. It's like it's got like a defiance to it, right? It isn't just like, oh, Charles, you're dead. I'm so sad. I'll do what you want to do. It's like, fuck you, Charles. I'm going to show you how it's fucking done.
I have your money and resources, I'm going to show you what you should have been doing. Yeah,
yeah. He also mentions, hey, I thought you, hey Scott, Gene, I thought you guys were fucking off out of here. But Scott's like, not a chance, not while you're running this shit. I got to keep an eye on you. And then we have a really good scene with Jean and Storm, where Jean is like, hey, so the deal is like, I'm a little bit wishing my kid was born a human.
Yes.
Because I know how shitty it is to be a mutant in this world. And I fucking love this scene.
It was a great scene.
And this is like, I mean, not to like keep saying the same dumb bullshit again and again and again. This is so X-Men, like two characters talking about their emotions and shit like that. That's an X-Men story, man.
Yeah.
These are characters that actually have relationships and care about each other. They don't work together. They are family. They live together. And so, and then the idea also, the conflict about being a mutant, that they love it and they feel proud, but also they recognize how hard it is.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of people who have identities that, I mean, especially like, you know, again, this is a very gay show. I think that gay parents might be very happy to have gay kids, but because of the knowing what the world is like, also on some level, you're kind of like, I want them to have it easy. I don't want them to have it challenging.
Yes.
I want my kids to have,
I don't want my kids to be judged for
who they are in that
from
way.
Birth. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Like, and I think it's a really, again, I saw folks complaining about this online too. And I was like, get the fuck out of here. This is the best shit I've seen in a long time. in an X-Men story, because that really is what it gets down to, which is that I am proud of it. I am proud of who I am. I will fight for my recognition, but I also recognize how hard it is. And yeah. I have this kid, and I know what this kid's going to have to go through if the kid's born a mutant.
Yeah.
And she doesn't even know what this kid's going to have to go through, by the way.
No. Like, for us straights, it's when Forrest Gump learns that he has a son, and he's worried that his son is stupid like he is.
For us straights, it's like if you have a kid and you're worried your kid's going to be too much into Star Wars like we are. I hope that he likes the Yankees and whatever's popular on television. Much easier life.
Dear God, please be cool. Although I guess these days, if you like sports, you're not cool.
Storm has like really
kids, we fucked it all up for you.
Storm has this really great bit where she's like, you know what? Like, it is really hard. But without my powers, as much as I've wished I didn't have them, and I wonder what my life would be like, I would never have met these people that I call my family and how special this is to me.
Yeah.
I think it's okay. It's funny because a lot of times in comics or in movies or whatever, when characters have these conversations in the X-Men, like, it's really easy for Storm to say that because Storm's a goddess and like has incredibly cool powers.
Yeah. This was the big problem with X-Men The Last Stand, or one of the big problems is that, you know, Rogue is like, hey, they have a cure. They have a thing that like can get rid of your mutant powers. I'm going to take it. And Storm is like, how could you dare want to do that? And it's like, cause she can't touch another person.
Yeah. It's really
are Halle Berry. You're gorgeous woman who can also control the weather. You can walk around, do whatever you want. You can control the weather. Nobody would look at you and know you're a mutant. Rogue can't touch another human being.
Yeah, no,
I don't know if Rogue can even touch an animal. Like, if Rogue pet a cat, would she take the essence of a cat and know all the cat stuff?
I think if she touched the skin, I think she, if it had hair, I think she'd be fine, I think.
Okay. It's
flesh
okay.
to flesh, I think. Skin to skin.
But, like, she can't touch anyone. Like, of course.
I can't tell you how much I'd be touching dogs if that was the case. I would want to know everything about every dog in the neighborhood.
That's all I would do.
I really just want to know. I want to know who the dog's friends are.
Don't forget, it hurts the dog, though. You don't want to do that.
He'll get over it. I want to know who the dog's friends are. I want to know where the dog goes. I want to know what the dog thinks about. I want to know what he dreams about. I want to know everything about him. I mean, that's a very exciting opportunity to find out about the dogs.
I wonder if that's ever been done in the comic, if she's ever touched
him. I actually don't know.
Giraffe or something, and be like, oh.
Has she even done it to an alien? She must have done it to an alien, right?
I would think so. I don't know.
Meanwhile, Magneto's in his office and Rogue comes in, and it is, you could cut the sexual tension with a knife in this room.
Yep.
And Rogue is like, forget about all the times I fucked the shit out of you, Magneto, in the past. And he's like, all right. And then Val Kooper shows up with the UN. And
well, he's got his whole bit about Xavier in that, where he's like, you know, I could always feel Xavier in my mind. I built this helmet not because I was afraid he would take control of me, but because I knew that if I could still sense him, I wouldn't be able to do what I needed to do. Because I loved him.
I mean, very gay too. Yeah, very gay. Yeah. Very good. This Magneto is very good.
Yes.
This is a very good Magneto. By the way, he is wearing his best ever Magneto outfit.
Yes.
From circa X-Men 200. It is the top number one Magneto outfit. It is the most, he is, as they say these days, serving cunt. And it is just.
Especially with that hair.
Oh, the hair! I mean, this is my favorite Magneto look. I mean, like, people think that they invented it for the show, but they just copied it. Like, even the gloves are from the comics. Like, this is not. There was no element they added. This is just what he looks like.
I'm talking a little out of school, but I believe this is a John Romita Jr. design. I'm not 100% sure of that, but I
think
believe
it is. I think it is. It's from that era. Yeah. It's just such a fucking killer look. I mean, like, it is like, it's like the last gasp of like spandexy put your logo on your chest costumes.
Yeah.
Like, there's no functional element to this costume at all. There's not one piece of this that's functional. He's got his shoulders bare. He's got the gloves above his fucking elbows.
Yeah.
So fucking good. It's so good looking.
He's wearing like fucking opera gloves. Yeah, it's great.
Oh man. The big giant M. Again, I hate to keep saying this, but it was really fascinating to see somebody on Reddit saying, why does he have a big M on his chest? And everybody's like, his name is Magneto. And they go, yeah, but everybody knows who he is. I was like, buddy.
And also, he loves McDonald's.
You don't understand how comic books work, man. You want somebody's fucking letter on their chest or their logo or whatever. That's the beauty of it, baby. We love it. We love branding.
Yes, you want it big, you know. There's one thing I've talked about often is like the symbol on a character's chest needs to be big. I don't like when it's small. It's got to take up the chest. It's got to be big. And he's got a big M across his chest.
All the way down his fucking stomach. All the way down.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Love it.
Helicopters land. Val Cooper's there with a bunch of UN guards. They have guns, and they're here for Magneto. And it's a tense moment because the X-Men don't really know what they're going to do because, like, you know, Magneto's with them now, but he is Magneto still. And they work with the good guys now. Like, they're not, like, against the government anymore. So it's kind of a weird position to be in. And Cooper's like, we'll give you a fair trial, Magneto. And Magneto is, at first, like, he takes control of all the helicopters. They're like, these guns are ceramic, so you can't take control of them. And he's like, fuck you, helicopters remain metal. It's like very funny. And it was really great, though, because he takes all the helicopters, and he's about to cut the soldiers to pieces with the helicopter blades.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
I saw an incredible video. I saw an incredible video of a guy in Mexico, and he's walking to a helicopter, like he's walking head on towards a helicopter. And when he gets by the helicopter blades, he doesn't duck. And he just takes the helicopter blades right to the face.
How tall was this guy?
I don't know, but it is like the fucking scene from Dawn of the Dead.
But, I mean, helicopter blades are like 13 feet up, even higher.
I think he might have been like on a little hill. I think that the helicopter might have been like in a little low spot.
Okay.
It's a crazy – I mean, it's not like – it's not – I don't think it's fake because like it's not like the camera's far away and then all that you see is like a fucking red mist come out of this guy's face and he falls down. I mean, it's not like crazy. You know what I mean? But it's crazy. Yeah. Like to just think that the guy walked into a fucking helicopter blade. But people do that though.
Sure.
That happens.
I guess.
It does. Very famously happened on top of the Pan Am building in the 80s in New York, where the Battle of Manhattan took place in the Marvel movies.
There you go.
There you go.
I cut out that scene.
You know me, just watching people get killed by helicopter blades on the internet. My fucking algorithm is a nightmare. My algorithm is horrific. I think Jeffrey Dahmer wouldn't be interested in my algorithm, frankly.
My whole algorithm is comic books and Lego.
I mean, I get mine comes
and Google goes. Thinks I'm seven.
I get that sometimes. I'll get like comic books and Lego sometimes, and then all of a sudden it'll decide that I'm really into Faces of Death for a couple of days, and I'm not against it because I watch every video. Yeah. I watch so many. I told you this before on the podcast. I watch so many fucking car accident videos. I have watched now. It's, you know what I can't watch.
Did you see the guy eating the leg?
I sure did. How great. Like, speaking of Dawn of the Dead.
That was wild.
I feel like Finders Keepers, right?
I guess.
A dude got hit by a train here in California, and a homeless guy picked up the guy's leg. The guy got blown apart by the train, and a homeless guy picked up the guy's leg and began eating it. It was truly nuts. But you know what I can't watch?
Things are good in America.
I can't watch. I think that could happen at any time. I don't think that's like tied to anything. I think that's just a deranged.
I just think that's the kind of thing you see and you're like, something's wrong with humanity. Like,
I mean, that is, it is, well. it is a problem. I can't watch. It keeps trying to serve me up videos of people getting hurt skating or biking and stuff like that. And those, I can't watch those for some reason.
Okay.
I can't watch a guy break his arm.
Yeah.
I mean, if a guy gets his head cut off, I'm like, okay, sure, whatever. But I, for whatever reason, I think I can imagine that injury too much. You know what I mean? Like I can feel that too much.
Yeah.
As opposed to like somebody like having a horrific getting hit by a train or something like that. I can't even imagine it. Like I just can't even imagine what that feels like. It probably doesn't feel like anything. You probably just stop. You probably just cease to exist. But like falling off like a skateboard and down like 10 steps and like shattering your clavicle, I could totally imagine that.
Yeah.
I think that's why I can't watch those. It's kind of fascinating.
Like I'm looking here on YouTube and mine is clips from Mystery Science Theater 3000, clips about politics and superhero stuff, comic book stuff.
Well, mine is all Twitter and Instagram. I don't really do YouTube. Twitter and Instagram.
I never look at the Twitter for you, so I have no idea what's in there.
I look at for you a lot because it's got a lot of weird stuff.
For you.
But what happens is that with Twitter especially, if I click on one right-winger's tweet, I will get insane right-wingers in my feed for the next 2 days. I have to actively click on other kinds of tweets to make it not show me the thing.
Yeah.
So that's really bad. But that's what happens. If I click on one accident video.
Yeah, that happens to me all the time.
Then it's just endlessly accident videos. Just immediately.
My what's happening, the trending for you is always bad for me because it's all just right wing stuff.
Yeah.
Because I want to see, I'll see something about whoever. And I'm like, what do they do?
Right. That's the thing is these guys post dumb shit. So you feel like you have to go look at it. And then the algorithm, because it's probably already weighted and charted on the side of right wingers anyway, then says, oh, you like right wing thoughts? Well, here's I had one today about a guy that was the attack in Moscow was timed to the symbolism of Easter, which was timed to this at the CERN. They were doing Operation Rabbit on the same day. I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? That's what they feed me now.
Yeah.
So if I ever lose my mind, it's because of the algorithm.
Let's see. My for you is Tyler Perry, Dark Brandon, Back to the Future, Late Night with the Devil, Simpsons. Right now, it's not bad. The Ones That's Who Live. Good. I don't know what that is. Boycott NBC, Spider-Man, Don Corleone. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
I like that. Kamala Harris, What a Shot, New 52, Israel Ethnic, Cleansing Gaza. There you go.
So Magneto though is like, you know what? I could kill all you guys, but I'm not going to do it. I'm going to go get taken into custody, but you have to give me a fair trial. And X-Men, I'm doing this to earn your trust. So the trial begins and there are a ton of people outside who are really mad that he's getting a trial at all. And we see that the Friends of Humanity guys put on a whole outfit. You got a whole bunch of, weapons and shit. And, Magneto begins his opening remarks, getting closer to talking about the Holocaust here than the original show. We watched the episode where they gave Magneto's backstory in the original cartoon, and it was not the Holocaust.
No.
It was a war-torn country. But here he says because it was religion, right? He says
because we called God by a different name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They called
Which isn't very Holocaust either, right?
I mean, you know what?
Hitler wasn't they say Yahweh.
The thing is that they call him God too. No, that's not really a good way, but I think it's a good way of saying religion. We had different religion.
Yes.
I think it's more complicated than that, frankly. But I think anti-Semitism is more complicated than they have a different religion from us. It gets the point across, right? And he makes it more clear that there was a true atrocity, as opposed to in the original cartoon, it was he lived in a country that was war-torn.
Yeah.
Outside, the judges don't really believe him. And also, he has no legal standing.
No.
He makes no legal arguments at all that all of his many crimes he should not be held responsible for his many, many crimes.
Yeah.
He's like, I had a hard childhood, man. That's just not enough.
Things were tough.
And he's like, I'll do better now. That is not
one of the judges is too bad. That doesn't mean you get to beat up humans. He's like, well, you guys, you beat up mutants. So I only acted in defense or in retaliation. And it's like, that's also not going to get you out of
trouble. It's not going to work. That's not going to work. Doesn't matter because the protesters outside at January 6th, the building, and they get right in. And so the X-Men go help stop them from getting into the main chamber. But back at the mansion, we have a very funny scene where Logan is hanging out with Jean, and Jean comes into the room and goes, Logan, he's coming. And Wolverine pops his claws and goes, who? Apocalypse?
Yeah.
And she goes, no, the baby, you idiot. Very funny. And so she has to get taken to the hospital immediately. And she phones Storm psychically and says, I need Cyclops. I'm going to say, by the way, this is my only one piece of writing I didn't like.
That she needs Cyclops?
I just don't feel like Cyclops would go.
I agree.
I feel like Cyclops, the character.
Well, even more to it, I don't think Cyclops would go and be like, Rogue, you're going to have to come. You're one of our heavy hitters. You got to come with me and we'll leave Morph, to handle everything. Seems like a bad idea.
I just don't buy it. I understand why, like, dramatically it's good. I get it. Like, I totally get every piece of it. From a character point of view, I just don't see. I think that if Jean were dying, Scott would go.
Yes.
But if she's just giving birth, which might take longer than their fight.
Yeah.
Depending. I just don't see it. I just don't see it. I mean, maybe one of the problems is they made this seem like too big a deal. From a writing standpoint,
pretty big deal.
Right? I'm saying, like, I think if originally, I guess once the executioner shows up, it's like this is a big deal.
I mean, the executioner beats the shit out of Scott, and then like, hey, Jean's pregnant or Jean's in labor, and he's like, I gotta go, and it's like, it's a weird format there.
Yeah, it's just there's something that doesn't work for me with that. And again, if Scott had left before maybe the executioner showed up when it was just a riot. And they're like, listen, Scott, we can handle a riot. Like, that's not a big – we do this in our sleep. Yeah. Once the executioner shows up, it gets a little bit more intense.
Yeah.
So the executioner shows up. He's a character from the comics. Executioner Song is the name of his storyline. He does not cool in the comics. His deal in the comics was that he murdered mutant criminals.
Mm.
He's basically Friends of Humanity Punisher.
Yeah.
Which, like, honestly, like, in the world of X-Men, doesn't feel like a big deal.
I guess not.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it is a big deal, but, like, in terms of the X-Men metaphor being that the oppressor, like, he was showing up and killing, like, evil mutants, which he shouldn't do. Like, that's bad. I get it. Like, I totally get it. But, like, in terms of the larger metaphors and the human stuff, it doesn't seem crazy to me.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem extreme enough, frankly.
No.
Like, he's not killing innocent mutants. He's killing mutant murderers.
Yeah.
And again, I don't believe in that. But, like, story-wise, it just doesn't have the same ring as the people who are putting fucking shot collars on
mutants. It's not like Fall of the Mutants, where it's like, oh, we're going to kill every mutant.
Every mutant, right. Yeah, this is not the same thing, right? So, yeah, I mean, he's a character who's created for his name. I really enjoy listening to the voice actors try to pronounce the name Executioner properly so that you understand that it's the letter X-cutioner and not Executioner.
Yeah.
It's very interesting to see who could pull it off, who can say Executioner and who has a harder time saying Executioner.
Yeah.
I quite enjoy that. He beats the shit out of Scott. He really fucking takes everybody out. In the comics, he has a Shi'ar energy lance. I don't know what his weapons are here.
He's got a special gun.
He got a special gun, but he also has like a whole bunch of other shit on his back. I don't know if that stuff is alien. I don't know if the gun is alien. Out of nowhere, Lady Deathstrike shows up. But it's not her.
Confusing to me.
Why?
Because he comes in as Lady Deathstrike, and then he turns into Colossus, and he's able to take shots from the Sentinel gun, right? The little Sentinel arm gun thing, cannon, Mega Man cannon. Morph gains the powers of the people he turns into now? I didn't think that was the deal.
I don't think that's the deal. My argument here would be that because Colossus is made of organic steel, he can turn into that.
Okay.
Is maybe my headcanon on that, but it doesn't, I don't like it. I don't like it very much. I don't think it makes sense.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to get too worried about it. Because Morph, I don't like Morph.
He's okay.
I don't like Morph. And Morph is a character who was created to die in the comics. And he's a character who was put into the cartoon to die. And then they just kept bringing him back. And like, I don't get it. Like, I don't understand why he keeps coming back because he's not cool. And also, he is non-binary, but I can't imagine how anybody would guess that from this program.
I guess.
I mean, it makes sense because he doesn't have a form, right? He's just like a fucking – he's a shape changer. He doesn't have an original form. Of course, he's non-binary. He can be man or woman. But, like, I mean, you know, people got really upset about that, like, when they announced it. And I was like, I don't know how you can even tell. Like, I legitimately have no idea. So Cyclops and Rogue leave. Storm demands the soldiers uncollar Magneto so that he can help with the big fight. At the hospital, the doctor will not deliver Jean's baby because she's a mutant. I actually don't 100% disagree with his logic.
I kind of agree with him when he's like, look, you guys, you lose control of your powers. it's very dangerous.
She lost control of her powers on the way to the hospital.
Yeah.
She tears the roof off of Wolverine's Jeep.
Yeah.
Because she's having contractions.
Yeah.
The doctor's got a point. It's not the worst argument I've ever heard. I'll tell you that much. I mean, it's not great. Like, it's not great, but it's not the worst argument I've ever heard. So I think it's kind of interesting.
I do like when Wolverine gets angry at the doctor and he's like, you're going to do it or I'll give you a C-section.
That's really great.
Yeah. That was a good line.
That's a good line you couldn't say in the 90s. I really appreciate that. They can say it now. Back in court, Magneto's been unchained, and he creates a weird cage system around the protesters.
Out of swords.
That Storm turns into a fucking electrical fence. It's very cool. Yeah. It is very cool. And then Executioner shows up, and he goes to shoot Magneto with his special gun, but Storm jumps in front of it, and it takes all of her powers away.
Yeah. She says, the breeze. I can feel it.
It was kind of touching, right?
It was rough.
It landed. Like it landed when she's like looking up at the sky and I can't feel the moisture. It's like really well thought out. Like, I mean, this happened in the comics, so they're probably just lifting lines from the comics, frankly. But it was Rogue in the comics that she took the shot for. Which actually would have been a blessing for Rogue, wouldn't it?
Yeah, Rogue was like, what are you doing? I don't want these powers. How often do I have to tell you people this sucks for me?
Magneto loses his shit. So he fucking puts the Executioner on a giant fucking crest that's hanging in the room upside down, flies him through the room, picks up the huge chunk of the fucking room where the judges are sitting and flies all of them into the stratosphere.
Yes.
It is so fucking good. And he's up there and he is like, and it really is like, I was like, shit, like what is fucking going on here? And he has a really good bit where he's like, I came up here because Charles Xavier wanted me to, you know, live a different way. And I came up here where I could see the world from his perspective as one world we all have to live on together. And I was like, oh, this actually works. But then also he does a very good Magneto-y thing where he's like, I'm trying to be better. I hope I don't let you all down.
No, he says, I hope you don't make me let you down.
You make me let you down. It's so good.
That is so good.
It's really so great.
Yeah.
It's like one of the better like veiled threats anybody's done in a long time. I was very impressed by it.
Yeah.
So in this moment, the fucking judges are like, fine, we'll pardon you. Let us die. Jean gives birth. And
to help of Rogue, who takes the doctor's and like doctor powers.
What I really liked about this was that they go, you know, if you take his mind, will you know his medical expertise? And she goes, well, I guess we'll find out. And she takes it and she goes, nurses, get this woman into a room, stat. And I was like, incredible medical expertise. I love it. Oh, I love to hear the incredible medical expertise that she immediately gained, getting her to a room.
The one bit I wish they had changed a little bit is when they're like, Rogue, can you do this? And she goes, but Jean, if I touch your baby, something terrible could happen. And Jean's like, I trust you, Rogue. And she should have been like, well, Rogue, you're going to put fucking gloves on when you're helping me give birth. Know, like, right? That's gross.
When you're giving birth to a baby, everybody's wearing gloves. That's just totally part of the process. Like, we're not free-handing it. They give birth to a baby, and they name him Nathaniel.
Yeah.
Nathan, I should say. And that is, of course, our good friend Cable.
Yes.
So the news report tells us that Genosha is now part of the UN and Magneto has been pardoned. And
is it part of the UN or is it up for
vote? It's like up for vote for right? the UN. Yeah. It's like in the cut process, right? And we realize that Scott has come to trust Magneto. And
a good bit here where Scott comes in with two cups of coffee and Magneto says poison. And he goes, nope, dark roast. I like that.
I really liked it a whole lot. I liked it a whole lot. Yeah. It is really delightful. And so Scott and Magneto had their little bonding moment, and then Magneto's like, but you know, this victory came with a price. And we go downstairs where Beast is doing his tests on Storm, and he's like, hey, so bad fucking news. You lost your powers forever. So we see her packing up. She is freaked out by the weather, which is a very intense thing for her. She's never been afraid of the weather. And so she leaves a note behind for Jean, and the letter in the note says,
Not just a note. She also leaves behind her lightning bolt earrings.
Oh, that's right. Her lightning bolt earrings.
Which I greatly, I love that.
And she's saying, everybody, I gotta go. We live in different worlds now. And then we kind of get like a little bit of a montage of the team. So Scott's with Nathan, Rogue and Magneto are having a moment, and they're touching hands. So in the comics, it has been revealed that Magneto can manipulate the electric field around his hands in such a way that he can basically touch you without touching you, but the sensation and everything is there. So it is as if he's touching you, because in the Age of Apocalypse comics, he gets married to Rogue and they have a baby together.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. They have in the comics, they have a thing. They have like a thing in the comics. But so that's why he can touch her, because he is able to create an electromagnetic field that essentially you feel like you're touching him, but you're actually not doing it.
Yeah.
Wolverine and Morph are hanging out. They're having a nice time because Wolverine's sad in the trees. And then Morph brought him beer. But Wolverine only gets unsad when Morph turns into Sabretooth and Wolverine decides to kill him.
And destroys the beer.
He does destroy the beer.
It's weird to me.
And then we watch Gambit see Rogue leave Magneto's office.
Yeah.
And he drops the Queen of Hearts out of his hand. No, Gambit, his heart is broken.
That's good shit. That's the soap opera stuff that you need with the X-Men.
It's 100% what you need, yeah. And then we see Storm getting on a bus, and everybody, I have to say, this gorgeous black woman with a giant white mohawk came on, everybody looking at her, because of course they would. She's fucking stunning looking.
Yeah.
So everybody's like, oh, shit, this is bad. But Morph says, you know what? She's going to come back soon. She's going to spend one day out with the rest of those dipshits in the real world and be right back here again. And then the doorbell rings. And he goes, oh, wow, that must be her already. And then he opens the door, and there is a fucked up Jean Grey standing in the doorway. And she says, I need the X-Men, and then faints.
Yes.
And that is the end of the episode.
And Cyclops goes, Jean? Oh. And then it
ends. In case you were wondering who's the real Jean, this woman faints as soon as she comes on screen, which we know that's from watching the X-Men cartoon, that's the real Jean.
That's all she did in the cartoon.
Because the other Jean didn't faint once in these two episodes, not one faint. But of course, this is a storyline from the comics where Cyclops ended up with a clone of Jean named Madeline Pryor. This is actually a better version of it than the comics.
Where he doesn't know?
He doesn't know. He just marries somebody who looks exactly like Jean Grey, and everybody's like, okay, cool, I guess. And it's like very weird. And like, it's like very, she became a clone later. She was not written as a clone.
No, she was not supposed to be a clone originally.
And
then she became like a demon, didn't she?
She becomes the Goblin Queen, and she's going to turn into that this season of the cartoon.
Yeah.
They made a toy for it, so we know it's happening during the Inferno storyline. Big crossover. But yeah, this is actually a better version of it, where he thinks that he's married to Jean, but actually it's not Jean. Because again, in the comics, it was like, what? Are you crazy? You're marrying a woman who looks literally exactly like your dead wife? It's like creepy. It's like horror movie shit. You know what I mean? That's not like aspirational. You know? Because again, not that she looked like her or reminded him. She was her clone.
There seems to be a movie coming out that is that exact story, though.
Is there?
I saw a trailer. It's one of those Fathom Events movies.
Yeah.
And from what I can tell, the trailer, it's about a guy who is in love with this woman and she dies. And then he goes on he finds out that she has a twin. So he goes out looking for a twin so he can marry her.
Good thinking.
Always
have a backup.
It's kind of weird and creepy.
It is weird and creepy.
Yeah. There you go.
I know of a guy whose wife died, and then he married the sister.
Oh, yeah?
And then she died.
Oh.
I know. It's a little suspicious. Anyway, what did you think of these two episodes of X-Men?
They were great. They were fantastic. I had a blast watching them.
Yeah, they were really fucking... I honestly, like, I saw everybody loving them online, and I said, well, of course they're all going to love it online, because everybody's crazy nostalgic for the X-Men from the 90s, which I did not think is very good. The thing about the X-Men from the 90s is that it has the big thing going for it is they're adapting really good stories. They yes. have good stories. They just could not write them well.
No.
And it just did not look good or anything like that. But this show has that, and also they're writing it really well. And I said yes. this on Twitter. I feel like they actually read the stories and they understood why these comics worked.
Yeah.
And they've adapted that to it.
Yeah.
I would so, agree. I really fucking love these two episodes. So I watched them. I wasn't going to watch them until like this weekend because we record this on Sunday. And I saw you say that you really liked it. And I was like, oh my God, if Derek likes this.
Yeah.
You know, that's crazy. Mikey likes it. Yeah, it is terrific. Two terrific episodes. Again, does a really good job of handling the nostalgia a bit. Like, it feels like the old show.
Yes.
It looks like the old show.
This this is one thing. I really like the animation on the show, and I really wish What If was more in this kind of style.
Right.
You know, like, I think What If trying to be to look as much like the movies as they can, it just it feels very flat, and I don't like that. I don't like the look of that show. I don't like it. Where this, they can get a little, you know, more comic booky with it, and I like it. I enjoy that. That's part of what's good about animation, is you can do crazier stuff and wilder stuff and really go with it and party on, and you know. So I hope that they do more things like this than they do What If. Even though I know we have the Marvel Zombie show that's going to be in the What If style. But
I mean, so I get the What If thing because, like, they're trying to tie them into the movies. So they're trying to find a style that has more realism-ish that feels like it could be an extension of the movies. Do you know what I mean? I get it. I don't like it, but I get it. This is just a cartoon style.
But I mean, like, the Clone Wars was tying into the movies, and they just were like, fuck it, we're going to do our own.
No, I agree. I totally agree. But however, frankly, a lot of people didn't take the Clone Wars seriously because of how it looked.
Yeah.
You know, because it was too cartoony.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't, you know, I think I get where they were coming from again with the What If. I don't like it, but I get it because they have the voices and stuff. And it's like, we want you to feel like this is part of the MCU. We don't want you to feel like this is a throwaway cartoon. We want you to feel like these are alternate universes in the MCU. Again, I don't like it, but I get it. But yeah, no, this is a better look. I mean, it has the look of the classic cartoon but I think better animation than the cartoon. There's a lot of complaints that the animation is not as good. People are out of their fucking minds.
What?
The animation in the original show is trash.
Terrible.
Absolute
terrible
trash.
Animation.
They were very bad animation on that show. The animation here is good and smooth. It's really well done, while also nodding to the trash animation from the 90s. Yep. It feels a part of it, a piece of it. Yeah, I don't know. I just thought it fucking ruled. I can't wait for the rest of these episodes.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
And I just, like, when I saw the Goblin Queen figure, you know, months ago, I was like, ah, give me a break. But now I'm like, okay, let's see what you got. Let's see what you got. I'm kind of curious. What do you got here? Like, show me what you fucking got up your sleeve. Cause I think you could
tell
me
what you got.
Cause there's, like, you know, and there's been a lot of stories since the 90s that are ripe for adaptation. You know, they blew through a lot of the really famous ones in the old show.
Yes.
But there's still plenty of stories to tell. So I'm kind of super curious. I kind of want to see where it goes. And the X-Men, since this show aired originally, has changed its own status quo a couple of times. And I'm kind of curious if this cartoon is going to go in that direction too.
Yeah. Like, how, like, will they go into the Grant Morrison stuff?
Or will they go to the era where Scott was a terrorist?
Yeah.
Like, I think that there's a level of maturity to the show while still maintaining the feeling of a kid's show, but it's written maturely. I think that you could do that. I think you could have Scott kind of do his story where he became like a hardcore extremist.
Sure.
So.
Yeah. I'm very, very
excited about it. So. All right. That's it for this week. The big news for us is that we're going to swap what days this show airs. Usually we do our Star Wars show, The Bad Batch, on Fridays. And then we do Marvel Vision on Mondays, but we're going to swap them. We're going to do Marvel Vision on Fridays and the Bad Batch on Mondays. And the honest to God truth reason why, there's a lot more excitement about X-Men, both from the listener base and from us, than for the Bad Batch. And so we want to get the X-Men shows out closer to air date as opposed to waiting 5 or 6 days. So next week, the show's going to come out on Friday. So you're going to get technically 2 episodes of Marvel Vision this week. So
take that.
Cool. It's pretty cool. So we'll be back again at the end of the week with the next episode of X-Men 97. Until then, oh, come hang out with us on our Discord. Talk about this stuff live while it's happening. Just $1 a month gets you the Bad Batch, our Star Wars show, and also gets you access to the Discord, www.patreon.com/cinemasangha, S-A-N-G-H-A. Come hang out with us. It's a good time. And we will see you guys again next week. Until then, may you be happy, may you be healthy, may you be safe, may you be well, but most of all, may you remain a true believer.